how do we get communities to begin to think sort of nearly like collective entrepreneurship? And that to me is, that's the essence of entrepreneurship. We're focusing on social entrepreneurs, and I think we're probably better focusing on, you know, what makes it social, and that's the collectivity, the society, the community itself, rather than the individual.
Welcome to the From Passion to Action podcast, a discussion about social innovation and social entrepreneurship from Dublin City University. I'm Dr. Eimear Ní Bhorádaí.
I'm Donica Kinlan.
And I'm Mita Power. In this series, we talk to academic experts in social innovation and entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurs who have founded their own social enterprises, and community organizations that are contributing to meaningful social change.
The aim of these conversations is to delve into the concepts of social innovation and entrepreneurship in theory and in practice, to discuss why they are important in today's society, and above all, to explore ways to embed these concepts in higher education across different disciplines.
The From Passion to Action project is based at Dublin City University and funded by the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning in Higher Education. We hope that you enjoy sharing these materials as well with your colleagues and with your students. Professor Derek O'Brien, Professor of Public Policy Practice. Derek, thank you very much for having this conversation with us today about the social enterprise policy landscape. To begin with, we'd like to ask each of our guests the same three questions, and I'm going to start with them. What's the first word that you think of when you hear the concepts of social innovation and social entrepreneurship?
Solidarity.
Solidarity. Very interesting. And what is your own understanding of social innovation and social entrepreneurship?
I tend to think about, you know, the social and our societal objectives. And that's what, to me, distinguishes social enterprises or social innovation organizations from more general civil society organizations or sort of market-oriented businesses. It really is about the social or societal objective. You know, it's about the common good. That's the basis for their commercial activity.
And why do you think social innovation and social entrepreneurship are important in today's society?
I think they've always been important. I think we have a renewed interest in a very particular type of social innovation and social entrepreneurship in the last 15, 20 years, particularly in the Anglo-Atlantic world. A lot of it is sort of, I think there's a perception that the state has failed or is incapable, successful at delivering certain types of intervention or social service, and that more flexible organizations are required.
Okay. So you gave me in the beginning, the word solidarity was the word that came to mind with these concepts. So we're talking about something without having defined it. So how would you define a social enterprise?
To me, a social enterprise has a social or societal objective. The profits are reinvested to achieve the social objective, and the organization is managed using democratic or participatory principles.
And who owns the organization?
I tend to think in terms of members or users or beneficiaries.
Okay. And what other definitions of social enterprises are out there, and what are the differences between those definitions and your preferred definition?
There's a variety. So you could sort of say there's a spectrum of definitions that range from sort of what now tends to be called the social and solidarity economy definition, which would be very common in the developing world and in the UN, to sort of the social impact organization, which would be getting a lot of coverage in the US, the UK, and more recently, Ireland. So to me, the big differences are the reinvestment of profits, the basis, or sort of the ownership basis for the organization, and then the management of the organization, so the governance of the organization. So I tend to see the European approach or the UN approach as much more democratic. I think in many ways it's closer to the roots and historical evolution of the broad social economy. And I think that that particular perspective is quite distinct from, say, the US, UK, and even to a certain extent, the Irish definition. So the Irish definition that's initially came from the Forfoss report, I think, in 2013, and was sort of codified, as it were, in the National Social Enterprise Policy, has no particular focus on democratic or participatory principles for the governance or management of the organization or the ownership of the organization. So at one level, it allows for a lot more types of organization be considered social enterprise or come under the social enterprise policy than you would tend to see in other countries. And I think that's one of the issues we have. We have a lot of organizations that are probably closer to being social impact organizations led by individuals, in some ways more like a modern charity, and the more traditional collectively oriented, socially oriented social economy enterprise, or social, I mean, and the European Commission tends to talk about social economy enterprises than social enterprises per se. To me, there are quite significant differences.
So you mentioned these social impact organizations that would be similar to a modern charity. Would you consider older traditional charities as social enterprises or not?
Not really, no. I mean, the charities, like Ireland was a late bloomer in terms of charities for a whole pile of reasons. I mean, primarily sectarian. So, I mean, we really don't begin to see mainstream charities in Ireland until the 1840s. And they were there to provide services that the state really wasn't providing, particularly around healthcare. Okay, so the growth of the Catholic hospitals after what I think is the Catholic Bequest Act in 1842. So Catholics were actually allowed to leave their estate to religious organizations or Catholic organizations. And that wasn't possible until the 1840s. So you have this growth of sort of charitable organizations delivering services with a particular ethos. And that's sort of the growth of that's the birth of the modern charity, I think, in Ireland. I think that'd be fair to say. We still have charities delivering services coming from a particular ethos. Whereas social enterprises in the European tradition, they tend to come from the people experiencing that gap, that's deficient demand, that lack of services. So they're oriented in society rather than, you know, a church or a religious congregation. And I think that's quite distinctive. And I think that's what strikes me more and more about the new type of organization coming to the fore in the last number of years, particularly I tend to talk about socially conscious entrepreneurs, but more being to think about the distinction between social economy enterprises and what we might call social impact enterprises or social impact organizations. That it's where they're coming from and on what basis they're governed, and they are distinct and different. Yet the same policy framework is applying to both.
Okay, very interesting. So you mentioned earlier on that you define a social enterprise in terms of the ownership structure, the management structure, and how the profits are reinvested and so on. Can you give an example of a great social enterprise and what is special and unique about it?
The credit unions were probably the classic social enterprise in Ireland in the broad sense. The community oriented, the community owned, they reinvest. And they basically, they're society focused in terms of building capacity. So, you know, the cooperative movement, rural cooperatives from the 1889 on, we have, you know, focused on social solidarity, sort of economic empowerment. They're democratically managed. They're probably the most successful, I suppose, contributing sort of social economy enterprises or social enterprises in the Irish system. And nothing has come close to that in the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we might come to some specific examples of individual social enterprises in a minute. The word pubble translates from Irish to English as people or community. And you are chair of an organisation called Pubble. Could you tell me about the role of Pubble, please?
Sure. So Pubble is it's a non-statutory state agency. So we've no governing legislation. We're set up as a company wholly owned by government. And we act as a sort of a funding intermediary for five government departments. And we provide sort of fund management, program administration services, and act as an intermediary between maybe 5,000 to 6,000 beneficiary organizations and the government departments that fund those organizations and the services they deliver. So we, at the moment, we're delivering about 30 programs for the Department of Children, Department of Rural and Community Development, Department of Justice, Department of Health. We've been doing that since 1992. Now it's evolved dramatically. It was originally focused for nearly the first 10 years of its organization, delivering one program. The local development program is now maybe 5% of our budget, whereas 25 years ago, it was 100%. So it's evolved dramatically and at a very considerable pace to deliver a similar service to a wide variety of sort of community-based organizations.
Okay. So could you give any star examples of client organizations of Pubble, star examples of social enterprises? What would they look like? What do they do? The ownership structure, the management structure, and so on, the social issue that they're addressing.
Okay. So there's a few that just spring to mind. So Speedpack in North Dublin, based in Clonshock Industrial Estate. That's a very well-regarded work integration social enterprise, funded through the community services program. It's would be regarded as sort of a national exemplar in that regard. ShuttleNet, based in Wicklow, again, a work integration social enterprise, focused on, you know, providing employment opportunities for women from the traveling community. Again, very well recognized, very well regarded, delivering a really interesting service, providing labor opportunities to a sort of quite an excluded and marginalized group. Festina Lente, based in Bray, they provide sort of equine therapy services to children and young people with learning disabilities. Again, doing something, you know, basically there's arguably a gap in the market. They're delivering these services to people actually to really can't articulate and organize it themselves, but they involve them in the delivery of the services. Very, very impressive organization. And then finally, and again, a different type of organization, but funded through the same program, it's a place called the Discovery Park in Castlecomer. So the Discovery Park is sort of a really significant adventure playground, but it also has a coal mining museum and sort of coal mining lived experience. Manages a big conference center, restaurant, and cafe, all under the remit of one organization based and owned in the community in Castlecomer. Again, it's really impressive to visit if anybody ever gets a chance. But what strikes me about Castlecomer was it's the sort of, I suppose, with use business language, there are a number of business units within the social enterprise. And, you know, they all interact for the benefit of the community, either to bring in tourism, create employment, but also to deliver services to the local community.
So is that owned by the county council?
It's owned by the Castlecomer community.
Okay. And then the Wicklow Shuttle Knit for the Traveller Women, is that owned by the Traveller Women, by the Traveller community?
It's a company limited by guarantee if memory serves. And so it would be owned by the community, so that the directors would come from the community. But this is an interesting point you raise, they wouldn't have a cooperative or participatory governance or democratic governance system in the way you tend to see in other European countries. I think they're very good, they're very well managed, they're very well organized. But if you were, say, delivering a similar service in Belgium or Italy or even France or Spain, the chances are it would be set up as a co-op. That hasn't happened in Ireland. And I think there's an interesting sort of discussion to be had about why that isn't the case.
When you were giving those examples, you mentioned worker integrated.
Sure. So they're primarily organizations that provide either work experience or create employment for people who may be distanced from the labour market, either because they're members of a marginalised social, socioeconomic community or group, or for maybe physiological or intellectual disability reasons. So, another one that I throw into the mix there is Walk, based in Walkinstown. So they provide work experience and training to young people with a range of autism spectrum disorders. And they're a fabulous organization, but incredibly creative, very entrepreneurial. They've expanded very considerably over a number of years, from providing training to actually running their own restaurants to actually franchising and running restaurants in other sort of tourism areas, which is actually quite an incredible achievement.
All very interesting. And I'm struck by some of the descriptions sound initially like a charity. And then as you describe it a bit more, one can see what you mean by social enterprise. When does it become a social enterprise and not be a charity?
I think that's a really good question, because and in Ireland that's very difficult to answer, because charities or charitable status is a taxation status, and it's about not paying tax on your profits because you're reinvesting them for charitable or social enterprise purposes. The problem in having that discussion in Ireland is we had a spectacular expansion of the allocation of charitable status to a really significant variety of organizations.
This is where we have a CHY number attached.
Yes. Yeah. So
that's charitable status.
Yeah, that's a massive expansion that happened maybe over two or three decades. So it was so easy to get, and because I had a benefit, everybody applied for it. So you had lots of organizations that were very strict social enterprises who, they're going to apply for a charitable status. You have lots of charities that actually have social enterprise elements. So if you look at, say, charities like Oxfam, arguably their stores are a social enterprise element within a broader charitable organization. Rehab, set up as a charity delivering certain services, but actually has a very significant social enterprise element. The Brothers of Charity, a variety of the religious orders who set up, historically, training centers or training workshops. So they came from a charitable space. They set up an enterprise that, becomes recognized as a social enterprise. They have charitable status. So you have that sort of historic block. In the last 10 years, as is particularly since the charity regulator was established, it's more and more difficult to get charitable status, which is a good thing, I think. I mean, I think it was handed out way too easily. So we have a more modern or more recent set of organizations established who don't have charitable status, who just purely trade, the folks in their traded income and reinvesting that traded income. They tend to be, in an Irish context, the more recent ones tend to be set up as companies limited by guarantee rather than cooperatives or industrial or provident friendly societies. And again, that's unusual. So Ireland is sort of an outlier from the European Union in a lot of ways in terms of policy and legal infrastructure. So the debate, the comparison becomes quite difficult. So unfortunately, you're talking about a spectrum where there are a lot of gray spaces between very clearly delineated blocks on the spectrum. So you have charities, you have social enterprise units, you have social enterprises of charitable status. You have a lot of organizations that are focusing on a particular social impact and are run as mainstream enterprises and have a focus on social impact, but actually probably wouldn't meet the European criteria social enterprise, but meet the Irish criteria for social enterprise. So that definitional quagmire is particularly problematic in Ireland.
And Pubble is a state organization, and you talked about funding coming from different government departments going to Pubble's clients. So is it not a charity if it's getting state aid? Or how come a social enterprise can get state aid?
Well, look, lots of people get state aid. You know, nothing to do with charitable status. Now, that it's interesting. Again, it's interesting you said. I mean, some research we carried out in the last couple of years has seen that, like, there's this quite widespread or pervasive, I think, misunderstanding. I don't want to say myth, but there's a pervasive misunderstanding. You have to be a charity to get, or you have to be a charity to receive state aid or, you know, public funding. It just so happens that lots of organizations that receive state aid through, you know, even like Sports Ireland or TUSLA or the HSE are charities. But you don't have to be a charity to receive state aid. I think the critical issue here is it was so easy to register as a charity. Nearly everybody did. And I think that can be quite confusing. So lots of organizations that Publi fund or that say Dublin City Council fund through their social enterprise grant scheme, they're not charities. So again, that's one of the confusions. And I think it actually has caused a lot of confusion in terms of research in the sector and among the sector itself.
I think, you know, private for-profit organisations get state aid through the local enterprise offices in every county or through Enterprise Ireland.
Yeah, and the IDA, So, you know, I think this issue of the focus on the charities, I think it's misplaced. And look, media, there's a media narrative. And it doesn't help that things like Bohor over the last couple of weeks or Rehab or CRC, these sort of issues have arisen. Now, the charity regulator, it's in place. That the charitable sort of charitable sector and even work we're doing with, say, Charities Institute of Ireland, I think there's a recognition that that is changing, that space is becoming much better governed. That the regulator is having much more of an impact. The legislation, the process has been updated. There's always going to be resources about your regulator, but I think that the charitable sector is it's gone through some very significant changes and is going through some very significant changes. I think there will be a lot less charities in the next 10 years.
So we need legislation to define what a social enterprise is as distinct from a charity or...
That's a very fair point. I would be of the view that yes, I think legal status and legal form designated special would be beneficial. That being said, arguably we already have it with co-ops. I mean, so most social economy enterprises across Europe are some model of cooperative, you know, mixed member or producer or worker. We have a long history of that in Ireland. What's interesting, I think, in the last 25, 30 years, co-ops have, for a variety of reasons, are not seen as a flexible enough sort of form or structure. Now, I'm not sure how rooted that is in reality. I mean, there's one of the more interesting awards or recent bodies set up, the Great Care Co-op, set up in Dublin by recent migrants. Now, they've set up as a company limited by guarantee. That's their legal status. But they're actually managed as a co-op. So they use the co-op principles and their governance processes through cooperative principles. So again, it's an evolving space. I would have a very particular view. I do think that we probably do need to give much more thought to that space. I've carried out some work with a colleague, Paula Dolan, and I think, you know, we'd be of the view definitely that this is something that needs further investigation. My preference would be, as I said, probably would be for some form of recognition. So if you look in the UK, they've gone for what they call the community interest company. But just go back to your questions, your flag about charities. So one of the issues you tend to see across European sort of legal infrastructures for social economy enterprises, social economy organizations, is what we might call an asset lock. Something is set up for a social purpose or societal purpose, and it generates income and develops and establishes assets. They can't be sort of sold off for private purposes. That the organization has to sort of transfer those onto another social organization. We don't have that in Ireland. The closest we have is charities. So charities can't divest themselves of their assets to private individuals. So that's one of the other reasons I think charitable status has become attractive to some organizations as a way of actually creating an asset lock. That's not a particularly well-designed mechanism for social enterprises, but it's the one that's there. And look, there is ongoing work in the department to look at this, but it's definitely part of the thinking. But back to the point, look, we have a social enterprise model that's co-ops. The issue is less and less people are applying or setting up co-ops. They're setting up more what are perceived to be more flexible models.
Yes, and they have had great success in a lot of different countries around the world over a couple of centuries.
Yep.
You mentioned the department a minute ago, so I'm going to come back to some of the work. I presume you were talking about the Department of Community and Rural Development.
Yes.
So, and that brings me to my next question, Derek. It can be said that those at the coalface work primarily with short and medium term priorities. What are we going to do in the next month or two? Or what are the services or supports that a particular type of disadvantaged or disabled community would like to have and needs to have and should have in terms of being worker integrated, worker empowered and so on or whatever. So that's the coalface people are operating at short to medium term priorities. And those working at policy level are primarily working from a more medium to long-term perspective. So, and the first ever National Social Enterprise Policy for Ireland was published in the year 2019, in July. And you are on the project implementation group established soon after that. Can you tell me about the achievements in developing social enterprise policy to date and the challenges associated with it?
Okay, I think one of the there's a number of early achievements. One, actually having a policy was significant. There was definitely a gap in the space. I think the second practical achievement was actually getting all the departments around the table. So one of the big issues historically has been the absence of, you know, what was jobs, enterprise and innovation is now enterprise, trade and employment from around the table. So the mainstream economy or enterprise development department rarely sort of attended or was involved in sort of social enterprise discussion. That's no longer the case. So the department is there and in particular, the sort of the National Center for Excellence for the local enterprise offices there at the table. Okay. Now, the second really positive achievement is there is a local authority representative. So Dublin City Council are representing local authorities who sort of as the local state tend to provide an awful lot of government support services to small and medium enterprises, including social enterprises. And Dublin would be recognized widely as sort of the pathfinder in this regard. And it was quick out of the gates to provide services and to set up sort of the fund. So the Dublin City Social Enterprise Fund, I think would be, you know, actually has been recognized and has been copied nationally as a very innovative approach to supporting social enterprises. So there, I think that was sort of low hanging fruit institutionally to get justice, enterprise, trade and employment and the local authorities in. The other, I suppose, interesting early stage development was the involvement of the higher education sector. So the department took the approach that they wanted the sector represented. So they actually sort of had an application process open to all the institutions, the institutes of technologies, the technological universities and the Irish universities to apply. And Dublin City University, you know, sort of applied and it won the space on the table representing the HEIs. So that HEI network that, you know, we represent, it meets maybe twice a year and it continues to, in addition to my own role, providing input into the implementation group, that HEI network, it meets and it provides input into the department. So they were quite interesting, you know, and very innovative approaches. The implementation group also includes representation from a number of social enterprises and representative groups, including the WHEEL, the Irish Local Development Network, the Irish Social Network, and Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland. So there are sort of four overlapping representative groups. And then there is a social enterprise, Ronan O'Dolig from Triftify. So you tend to have quite a few people there who are quite coalface focused, to take your phrase from earlier, and bring that short and medium term perspective to the table. That being said, nearly everybody around the table has some involvement, either sitting on the board of a social enterprise or involvement. So there's a lot of coalface knowledge at that table. Challenges in terms of implementing the policy is, I mean, we're nearly at the end of the policy's process. So it was 19, 20, 21, and into 22, a new policy will be in place. The sort of the particular focuses of this, of the first policy were raising awareness. That was a really strong issue about raising awareness of the sector, both among the sector itself and among sort of funders and government departments. Because actually social enterprise in Ireland in particular can be quite hard to get your head around. So you're back to definitions. So most people have an idea of what a credit union does and they understand the social aspect of that. The same with a co-op. But when you get a move away from that, actually explaining what a social enterprise does and or social impact organization does can be very difficult. And to sort of get your head around, well, why would that receive government funding? Or what's the social aspect of that? Or what's the impact of that? That's been one of the interesting aspects over the last 2 years, working with departments, trying to, you know, to get them into that space. Now, interestingly, one of the most innovative departments is actually the Department of Justice. So the Department of Justice, actually, they had a social enterprise strategy before the National Social Enterprise Strategy. So they launched their social enterprise strategy in 2017. Now they focus on a very strong focus on work integration social enterprises. So it's about getting people with convictions into employment because there's a, what they call the first job gap. So you've come from some sort of custodial system, getting the first job is very difficult. Getting the second job is a lot easier. But if we can get you into a first job, and that's where social enterprise becomes really, really helpful in that regard. So it reduces recidivism, you know, reoffending. And you've got some very, I mean, if you look at Locken House in Cavan, it runs, I think, 3 or 4 social enterprises in the prison there. So I'm not sure this is the appropriate term, but it's like a step down facility where you've done a very significant prison term. This is a step before you go in back, or you're released. It's not an open prison per se, but it's quite relaxed. It runs a farm. It runs a cafe. It prepares, you know, bike sales and bike repair, stuff like that. So giving people basic skills and sort of employment skills. Then you have organizations like PACE, which a lot of your listeners may see the products across Dublin. So they're the big flower boxes and tree boxes across the city. Then you have things like Mugshot, which is, I think, one of the best named organizations. But yeah, it's a coffee van, but they do sort of catering services as well. Now, they've done work for Pubble, we've had them in. They've done work. Actually, they catered the launch of the National Social Enterprise Policy in 2019. So I think I have a Mugshot mug somewhere in the office. But they're a brilliant organization.
And a lot of those organizations are providing a service or a product, just like a private for-profit organization, with that additional social impact. So addressing a social issue, as you say, for people with convictions.
I mean, Maggie Clune, the manager of PACE and Mugshot, she's a PhD student in TU Dublin at the moment. So maybe she could be a good potential interviewee for your podcast.
We'll be straight on to her after this. speaking of universities and so on, so coming back onto the campus, we've been out there having a grand tour of the landscape of social enterprises in Ireland and internationally. You gave some international examples. So coming back then onto the higher education campuses, I'd like to ask you a few questions about that. What skills do you think students need to develop to be effective social entrepreneurs?
That's a difficult one. I think flexibility, I think risk awareness, you know, a sort of market analysis. That is a difficult question. I'll tell you why. I'm very struck by a particular trend. I'm sort of looking at some, working on some research at the moment. So if you look at the most successful sort of social, student social enterprises in the last 40 years, 50 years, you look at Use It, and you look at the commercial services of most of the student unions in the bigger institutions, so DIT, UCD, even DCU to a limited extent, they're all gone. And they were traditional social economy enterprise organizations that were collectively owned, they delivered commercial services. There are very few, students are not creating those types of organizations at the moment. Student unions are not creating those types of organization at the moment. So there is no Use It replacement. There is no sort of replacement for the old student union shops. Now, I think that's really interesting because I think it says it, there's something there, but actually, what are we teaching students? So are we teaching them to create a particular type of organization rather than another type of organization? So when you ask your question, what should they know? I'm actually not sure, but I'm interested in what they are doing with what they have at the moment. And what they are doing with what they have at the moment is setting up a very particular type of organization that's quite distinct. Use It was set up, I think, in 1962 or 63. So it's quite distinct from what we've done for the past 60 years. And I think, you know, that's really interesting.
Okay, well, let me put it another way. If we want to develop and educate students who set up new social enterprises or who will go and work in the social enterprise sector, what should we be teaching them?
I think the first thing I would say is humility. First, I think we should be getting them out to see actually how communities operate. So I think it's about engagement and outreach. What are the challenges facing the communities? So what's happening in rural Ireland? What's happening in Ballymun? What's happening in Balbriggan? What's happening in Coolock? What's happening in Darndale? You know, what are the gaps there? Like, there's some incredibly successful social enterprises in Darndale, say some of the home care services, the repair services, but like, you know, they're not really been looked at in terms of, I mean, fair play to yourself in terms of, you mentioned Speedpack and organize that. So that's beginning to happen. But there's a plethora of these organizations that are community based, that are actually real social enterprises in the European and in the really strict sense. They're community embedded. They're empowering organizations. They're delivering a service. There are businesses in the sense of the way the business school or Fiontar would think about them. And yet we don't tend to think of them in that way. I think the way we're looking and teaching about social enterprise, it's very much focused on creating social entrepreneurs.
What's the difference, sir?
I'm not sure a social entrepreneur can be the social aspect if they're not embedded in a community. I would really query that. So I think what we may be doing is creating a generation that are focused on a particular type of social impact. And we will have a plethora of these sort of social impact organizations. But I question the societal, the broader societal embeddedness or empowerment agenda there.
Are you talking more about civic engagement than enterprise skills?
I think engagement probably has to come first, maybe in parallel, but I'm not sure one, if you're interested in sort of social enterprise or social economy organizations or social economy enterprises, depending whatever your phrase you're comfortable with, I'm not sure the value unless it's done with communities.
So we need to engage with the communities.
Yeah, no, and look, that's a very particular perspective. I'm conscious of that. You'd have a feel, you know where I'm coming from. One of the growth areas, in particular in academia around this space, has been the sort of more towards socially conscious entrepreneurship, rather than looking at actually, how did we create credit unions? How did we create worker cooperatives or producer cooperatives? The dairy co-op movement in this country. Surely, you know, these are the organizations that have created really significant value, empowerment, and impact over decades. And I think that's, you know, to me, that's a big area.
So if we have the students engaging with the civic organisations, the social enterprises, the community development organisations, they can go home to their own parishes, they can go home to their own communities and look what happened on the ground.
Look, I would be very hopeful. Like, I mean, I think we're entering a very, very interesting and positive sort of phase in societal development. Like, there's a couple of things that really strike me. One, the whole area of energy production, particularly in rural Ireland. That's ripe for social economy involved, or sort of facilitating enterprise production within a social economy framework, you know, cooperatively owned, either, you know, either through producer ownership, to communities, to community co-ops. We're seeing some, but nowhere near what you'd expect to see. So you'd see a lot more, like there's a network of energy cooperatives in Northwestern Europe and Belgium, the Netherlands and Germany, you know, where you have like 70 big towns and small cities that actually have set up energy production co-ops. Now, we have a small number in Ireland, north and south. To me, that's massive and ripe for development. One or the other sort of, I'm loosely calling infrastructure co-ops. So if you look at group water schemes, I think we've over 3,000 group water schemes. They're all set up as co-ops. So you could argue we already have a cooperative infrastructure that's focused on, don't use the word infrastructure again, but infrastructure development around water, sort of utilities, water utilities. Could that be applied, could that soft infrastructure be applied to energy production? Combined heat and power, turbines, solar. There's very little work done on that. And I think that's really ripe for development. And that's that the potential for there in terms of the economy, and particularly post-COVID, as we're beginning to reorient our model of economic development, and particularly spatial development, I think it's ripe for development.
In talking about business models and social impact, I suppose trying to address a social issue without embedding yourself or you and your team in the local community and working out how it could actually work from that kind of bottom-up approach. We hear talk about things like a business model canvas being used to develop a social enterprise or impact gap analysis and so on. Do you use any of these models, and what do you think of them, or do you have other models you find more useful?
We've used a social business model canvas, and look, I think it's a useful tool. I think it's an interesting development is if you look at these sort of accelerator programs. So the university has a number of accelerator programs. We actually developed what was potentially a very significant social enterprise accelerator program, but we couldn't get the funding. But you know, one of the organizations that supported us in the bid for the funding, you know, they got the idea and they ran it. It was great. Like, we didn't get the funding. 2 years later, they were able to develop it and go for it. That was great. So we're beginning to see that coming along, where you have these developer sort of accelerator programs. I suppose the issue about that again is they're very focused on individuals. And I think something we do need to think about, actually, how do we get communities to begin to think sort of nearly like collective entrepreneurship? And that to me that's the essence of entrepreneurship. We're focusing on social entrepreneurs when I think we're probably better focusing on, you know, what makes it social, and that's the collectivity, the society, the community itself, rather than the individual.
So coming back into the lecture theatre or the classroom or the teaching in a module,
it's much more focused. I would think it's much more about, we should be much more focusing on groups and working with groups. Now, that's a massive challenge because our model is focused on individuals. You know, I mean, we all have colleagues who, you know, what's the next, is it Stripe? You know, what's the next Facebook? You know, that's a very particular model of entrepreneurship. And I think we need to be looking at something quite different.
Would you consider, you mentioned Thriftify and Ronan O'Dolly, who's a DCU graduate of BA Gnógas Gaeilge in Finther. Thriftify provides, it's kind of like the Amazon platform for social enterprises in selling. Charity shops can sell their products on the platform. would you consider that a social enterprise, or where would you put it on the spectrum you mentioned earlier on?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's an interesting one because it's actually owned by a co-op. It's owned by Sedco, which is a cooperative. And I think this is one of the, you could argue, it's one of the more innovative things we've seen happen over the last number of years. So we are seeing co-ops setting up particular, you know, sort of businesses. So they're owned by cooperatives, but they're managed, you know, sort of as team businesses. But the shareholder is the only shareholder is a cooperative. That's something you'd see across Europe. So, you know, there's a number of very large cooperatives in regions in France and Spain that have sort of set up, you know, small business units to deliver a particular service or run a particular business. I think Thriftify is interesting is that you don't tend to see the collaboration between tech and IT and the co-op model. And I think it's interesting in that regard. Now, I from what I understand of Thriftify, it's a growing business. Like it's proved its worth as a model. And I think that, you know, there's definitely a potential market there for, but I think in terms of, it's interesting just as a standalone as tech, because actually it's something, if you look at most social enterprises in Ireland, they tend to be involved in, so say, service delivery rather than that sort of tech development. And I think Thriftify is interesting and just on that basis alone, no matter how successful it ever comes to be, what it's done in terms of breaking down a sort of a perceived barrier, I think that's interesting.
I think it's also interesting that it has received support from Enterprise Ireland, which would traditionally have been dealing only with for-profit enterprises. So
yeah,
I think it's
and the Dublin City Social Enterprise Grant Scheme.
Yes.
So it's got both. No, I think you're right. I mean, and again, that's, you know, is there something there, you know, do I suppose, and again, that's a challenge for as we begin to think about Enterprise Ireland. So one of the challenges with the European approach is that all profits are reinvested, so you can't have private stakeholders or shareholders, and that, so that reduces access to particular types of finance. So it raises the whole question about, well, how do you begin to finance, you know, social economy enterprises or social enterprises if you can't get into shareholder finance? And, you know, we've had this conversation ourselves about, you know, the growth of social finance, and, you know, the social finance ecosystem in Ireland is quite limited. It's got some very big players who aren't really involved, you know, so the credit unions would be major social finance players in most European countries, but not really in Ireland because, you know, the regulatory framework for credit unions. And that's probably a big issue over the next 5 to 10 years to see, well, how do you begin to leverage strength in the social economy, like credit unions and co-ops, to facilitate the development of other parts of the social economy?
Yes, especially, as you say, when the private shareholder model doesn't work, because then it's not a social enterprise.
And private debt providers like the banks find social enterprises deeply problematic. So, you know, you're cut off from one, arguably sort of from a, you know, an ethical perspective about shareholder finance, and then the other from a sort of a risk aversion perspective from mainstream finance providers.
I have two questions as we come to the end of our very interesting discussion, Derek. How do we bring about transformational change or systems change in order to bring about an optimized social enterprise, number one, in society? And I use the word society rather than economy, but it's society and economy, one could say. And at the second level, then, in higher education. So transformational change and systems change to optimize the value of social enterprises in society, in the economy, and in universities.
Well, I suppose by training, I'm a political scientist, so that may sort of shape my answer. To your first point in terms of society, I think it's political. It's actually about getting political parties to understand what's missing. And that's much more challenging at one level than we might take for granted. And at the same time, there is definitely space. So, and it's not just in the parties of the left or center. We have lost sight our politicians and our political parties have lost sight of the very particular benefits that come from supporting cooperative activity, either credit unions or cooperative organizations. And we've come to see that the benefits of purely market-oriented organizations, you know, shareholder capital, private entrepreneurs, we've come to see that as the only sort of value we should really focus on. To me, that's a political discussion and debate. So we need much more support for credit unions and looking at cooperative models of cooperative banking, which would be widespread across Europe, but we have no, like Ireland has, I think, the highest per capita membership of the credit union movement in the world, but we don't have a cooperative bank. That's really interesting. So why is that? We've actually had a decline in the cooperative sector over the last number of decades. Why is that? Given the sort of the social and the sort of economic empowerment benefits that come from that model of development and organization, one would have thought you'd have a very facilitative public policy. That hasn't happened. If anything, they've become more heavily regulated, particularly since the financial collapse. So there's definitely something there. So to me, systems change is about politics. It's about political discussion. We're seeing some early examples. So parties are beginning to develop policies in cooperative banks on social clauses in procurement. So I would be hopeful there, but much more needs to be done. Much more debate needs to be had. But again, it's nearly a mindset change. What are the things we value? Do we understand what we value? Do we understand how we've got here? Do we understand how long it takes to create valuable social and economic institutions? So, you know, if we lost the credit union movement, we'd have lost something invaluable in Irish society, not just in terms of sort of a community-owned finance system, but something much more important, you know, sort of an example of successful, you know, community-owned, democratically managed organization. To remind people that you know, democracy is close to them. So that's a very particular, again, a very particular perspective. In terms of higher education, I think it's really about looking at the outside. It's around engagement. It's about working with communities. You know, what are their economic empowerment needs? What are the appropriate models of development for them locally? So there's lots of money going into a lot of these communities, public money. You know, what's the best way to leverage that to create further economic empowerment for those communities? Do students look at that? And, you know, as academics, do we ask them to look at that? So if you look at, say, there's about 5,000 organizations across Ireland that receive the guts of €500,000 or €500 million in to run childcare organizations. You know, there's thousands of community-owned childcare organizations, often tied into other community service providers. So you actually have significant public, you have sort of service funds. Do we really study or research how they could be, leveraged to develop other business opportunities?
Replicated.
Yeah. And we don't tend to, you know, limit exception with some, definitely some colleagues in UCC and, you know, who are looking at that, but not as widespread as you might think. And I think this is it is an issue for academic colleagues, is many of our colleagues who look at social enterprise are coming from an entrepreneurship world. But if you look at across Europe, many of the people who look at the social economy are not coming from entrepreneurship. They're coming from geography or economics or politics. The big European network, EAMS or EMES, their conference is in October. There will be entrepreneurship academics there, but, there'll also be academics from a variety of other disciplines who have as much to contribute and I think that's an interesting one for us to sort of think through ourselves.
So should we be including the concepts of social enterprise and so on in our degrees in geography, in our degrees in politics, childcare, early childhood education, more than emphasizing it in business schools?
I think that's definitely something that could be done. Now, that being said, should it be done as part of a program, or should it be non-accredited, and it should be just sort of a parallel process that for students? I've no particular view either way. I mean, I think there's probably pros and cons to both. But I do think students do need to be exposed to, collective entrepreneurship or collective enterprise or, social economy enterprises or social, whatever definition or whatever language you're comfortable with. But why are credit unions successful? The students understand how this model has operated for decades and decades, where it came from, the social dynamic and driver that led to the creation of credit unions. It was just, really was about to stop criminal activity, stop money lending. So it was people coming together to empower themselves, to protect themselves, to have some control over their economic destiny. I mean, in parallel, you have the decline of the building societies. Again, the collapse of mutual organizations over the last 20 or 30 years, where in other parts of the world, they're blossoming.
So terms like collective enterprise or community enterprise, those terms will help focus on what it's actually about.
Yeah, because I think one of the issues that's happened, particularly since the mid-90s, so that idea of social entrepreneur and social enterprise, it's focused on, particularly in social entrepreneur, it's the individual. So somehow, I remember jokingly saying to somebody, there's a particular perspective that sees a social entrepreneur sets up a social enterprise and it operates in the social economy. That's nonsensical and contradictory in so many ways. Many social entrepreneurs have no connection with the broader social economy. They're not particularly interested in of our community or social economy, the social economy. They want to have a social impact. They're an entrepreneur that is either socially conscious or they want to have a social impact. They're not particularly interested in democratic or participatory governance. They're not particularly interested in, delivering a service to a marginalized or excluded community. They're interested in having a social impact. That's not negative. It's not wrong, but it is distinct from that more collective or community-oriented perspective.
It could be that it's in the nature of a successful entrepreneur to want to do it now and do it well and achieve and move on fast, whereas if we have more of a collective decision-making process, it takes longer, but it's more deeply embedded, ultimately, yep, in having that longer-term impact.
Yeah. Look, and that's definitely one aspect of it. So, turnaround speed is definitely an issue. But I think we're very poor at having that discussion because it is about values. And that's a very difficult issue. I mean, in business schools, there's a lot of debate around sort of ethics, business ethics, but actually values are also really important. What are your social values? And we've actually become a little nervous about that. I think we've become a little nervous about that. And that's quite interesting.
Nervous about debating it, or... When you say nervous, a bit shy of discussing?
Maybe shy, that might be a better word, but also there are many who would question the benefit of having that discussion at all, that business is business and, entrepreneurship is entrepreneurship. Mm. And it would fit into that sort of disembodiment of the market from society, that somehow markets are, it's sort of the classic neoliberal thing about, disembodied markets and markets as perfectly organized mechanisms, we're social creatures. The solidarity is an inherent social value. So surely it should have an impact on our economic activity, which is arguably, it's a subset of our social existence.
Yeah. So you're bringing us back to the very beginning when I asked you, Derek, what was the first word that you think of when you hear of concepts of social innovation and social entrepreneurship? You mentioned solidarity. Yes. And you've come around to solidarity again. I think you've given us a lot of insights and a lot of food for thought, but a lot of practical examples of social enterprises where we can go and spend our own money in solidarity with them, whether we're buying our flower boxes for our patios or buying our coffee. So we'd be buying our flower boxes from Pace, we'll be buying our coffees and maybe hiring as a catering company for events, the likes of Mugshot, or then choosing that we would buy our electricity or our energy through a community-owned energy generation organization.
And if you're going on holidays, Ireland's longest zip line is a social enterprise in Castlecomer, the Discovery Park.
Castlecomer. So we'll all descend on Castlecomer and zip lines. Yes. Derek, thank you very, very much for all your insights and very informative, plenty of food for thought. And I'm quite sure people will enjoy listening to our conversation today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Eimear.
Thank you for listening to the From Passion to Action podcast. If you'd like to find out more about the social enterprise work that Derek is involved with at Hubble, you can visit the website hubble.ie.